My name is Jamie Hill. I'm the Design and Communications Manager at Embark Sustainability. I think my favorite thing about Embark is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all, and it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of the community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.
It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Familiar with the aspect of fear that strangles us, holds us back, and keeps us living lives filled with stress, unhappiness, and emptiness. This kind of fear creates chronic anxiety, depression, and disconnection. However, our guest today will be sharing a hidden aspect of this same fear that affords us the opportunity to live a life with fear as an ally rather than a foe. In her research and work as psychotherapist, Dr. Carla Manley has discovered a way out of destructive fear and how we can turn it into transformational healing. She tells us the aspects of fear that we ignore or run from are often the very aspects that contain the subtle messages we need the most. Dr. Carla Marie Manley is a licensed psychotherapist whose focus is on fear-based disorders such as trauma, anxiety, and depression, as well as women's issues. With her doctorate in clinical psychology and her master's degree in counseling, Manley merges her psychotherapy skills with her writing expertise to offer easily understood guidance. Dr. Manley is passionate about creating healing from the inside out and maintains her clinical practice in Sonoma County, California, just north of San Francisco. She's the author of Joy from Fear, Create the Life of Your Dreams by Making Fear Your Friend. And also she's the author of Aging Joyfully. Join us for the next hour as we explore how we can release our battle with fear and turn it into an ally with our guest, Dr. Carla Manley. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Carla, welcome.
Thank you so much, Justine. Thank you for having me. It's a joy.
Oh, thank you so much for coming and taking the time. Let's talk about fear. Fear is primal. We all know that. Fear just is a natural instinct that we have. But how does it then become such a stranglehold on our life?
It's such a good question because it goes to the root of things. I think so many times that we forget how primal fear is, and we forget that it's what tends to operate us and push us in life unless we slow it down. And so, of course, when we're born, we have a little bit of fear, and that's a fear of, you know, when we want to be fed, we want to sleep, and we want to feel warm and safe. And that primitive instinctive fear of wanting to be loved and held safe, as we grow, as we age, and we run into things in life that are difficult for us, our fears become enhanced. They become more powerful. As we begin to have life experiences where we feel unwanted, unloved, unworthy, we start to retract and close down and feel guarded. We don't realize, nobody teaches us, nobody, and very few people understand, that is the beginnings of fear in a way that starts to strangle us in young adulthood and adulthood.
So you're saying that it oftentimes goes back to our very early years, our childhood, very early on, when it starts to become more than just a reaction to real danger, but it becomes something else.
Exactly. And the way that I like to look at fear in a healthy way is that we want to be tribal, right? We want to be part of a group because it keeps us safe. The wolves won't get us if we're included, right? And so that's a part of being tribal that's really helpful for us. Yet sometimes our tribe or outside tribes, you know, society or growing up in a family that's very difficult, we start getting messages that tell us that we do something wrong, that we should be something other than we are, that we need to conform, that we should be doing this or should be doing that or shouldn't be doing this. And so that starts this sense in us, this percolating sense that we are not okay, that we are not safe as we inherently are. And these messages called psychic introverts, I like to look at them as sticky notes. I think of them as sticky notes that we start pinning on the inside of ourselves. And if we're lucky, we grow up in a household and environment, we get lots of positive, yummy, sticky notes that say, you are loved, you are good, you are wonderful. Oh, you made a mistake? That's okay, let's figure out how to correct it. Lots of positive sticky notes grow inside. Yet, for many of us, in fact, I believe most of us, often in childhood, whether from parents, brothers, sisters, friends, the schoolyard, teachers, right? We start getting these negative sticky notes that tell us you're not right. You're not good enough. There's something wrong with you. We don't have, our prefrontal cortex isn't developed at that point. And so young brains take in all of this information as the truth. And that becomes the fear-based truth that so many of us are raised in and live in.
So what I'm seeing with what you're saying is that the information, for the most part, that we get about ourselves early on is through the eyes of others. You know, it's kind of like we look for that reflection.
Yes.
We look for that approval.
Yes.
And when it doesn't come to us, then we start to, what happens?
Well, the brain actually has mirror neurons. So you're picking up a very, very good point, and a very true scientific piece is that children, we have mirror neurons. So if you're looking at me with kindness and love, I'm going to be like, I'm safe, I'm loved. If you're looking at me with antipathy, disgust, resentment, I'm going to be picking that up in my brain and saying, I'm not good, I'm not loved.
Or I'm thinking jealousy.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh,
like jealousy, like, may have nothing to do with me. Maybe I am really great. I'm beautiful and I'm creative. And then somebody looks at me and they're jealous. And then that's an odd sort of thing. It's not that anything is with me. It's it's something else going on.
And that is so true. And so I'll speak to the jealousy piece for a minute. Jealousy and envy are very close to each other. They're cousins, so to speak. And so often if somebody's coveting something that we have or something that our relationship that we have, then why would that bring something up in us? Even if it's not about us, it brings up a sense of unsafety.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody wants what we are or what we have. And it's okay now, you know, it's natural to be jealous. It's natural to feel envy, but it's what we do with that that matters. Mm-hmm. Do we acknowledge, oh, I love her purse. Oh, I love the color of her eyes. Oh my goodness, she's beautiful. And leave it at that? Or do we actually give off some energy that would make you feel as though I'm coming after you or do something? And that's where our emotions, where we have the power to make them toxic or non-toxic.
So in this, that's what you would call destructive fear, mm-hmm. that kind of fear that is we react and then we start feeling bad about ourselves, mm-hmm. and then it causes all sorts of trauma and we start believing that and it just leads down this other whole path. And then you talk about fear in two ways.
Mm-hmm.
So let's kind of flesh that out a bit.
Okay. So I'm going to use an example that works really well with something that you had just said. As a child, we take on things that aren't ours, right? Because the prefrontal cortex doesn't differentiate. It doesn't have the capacity to reason. So let's say parents are getting divorced. That's why so many children think it's something they did, because they see it as a reflection of something that must be them. So they get this message, mommy and daddy are divorcing. I am bad. I've caused this. I've done something wrong. That's destructive fear at work, starting to get a hold of that child and say, there's something with you that's caused mommy and daddy to divorce. And sometimes we actually have a toxic mommy or daddy. And I've seen this, you know, in therapy where the mommy will blame the child or the daddy will and say, you've caused this. You know, your temper tantrums or your financial needs. So the child does, in that case, more hold on to the fear, the destructive fear, the messages. Destructive fear, we can simplify to say, is the messages, an irrational message within the self that's come from some source, self or other, that tells us we are not good enough, we are not safe, we are not worthy, and they all come down to us to not being safe, not being
and
loved.
Isn't the beginning of that always something, some strategy to help us cope with that sort of stuff that comes at us? I mean, in the very beginning.
Absolutely.
It's coming from a good source, like it's trying to make us safe.
Such a good point. They're called defense mechanisms. And so the psyche, when we're young, it doesn't know how to cope with all of this. So it starts building these defenses. Some people's defenses make them very angry and act out. Some people learn to shut down and retract, right? So those help a child who's very vulnerable, who doesn't really have the ability to reason or manage or really affect a lot of change in the situation. So the defense mechanisms are often very helpful to get a child through childhood. Mommy and daddy are fighting in the bedroom. What does the child do? It zones out. It runs out and plays, does something because it cannot bear that type of horror at such a young age, right? So these are defense mechanisms. Unfortunately, they carry on to adulthood, right? So now let's segue into constructive fear. So I like to see fear as a being, as a living and breathing entity. Why do I do that? So that we can start talking to fear. And we can start making it alive in the room. Otherwise, people, self-included, forget about it and think, me, I'm tough. I'm not afraid of fear. And we don't even think about it. But when we start realizing that fear is like a bully on one side, and on the other side, a very loving goddess, so to speak. And we want to see both sides of fear. And so constructive fear is the other side of fear. Constructive fear, so now this child is, let's say the child's grown up, mommy and daddy have divorced, and child is terrified of relationship or keeps getting into brutal relationship after brutal relationship because mommy and daddy were brutal with each other.
So let's talk more about that in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Dr. Carla Manley, and she is the author of Joy from Fear, Create the Life of Your Dreams by Making Fear Your Friend. And if you want to know more about her, you can go to her website, drcarlamanley.com, and that's spelled D-R, Carla, C-A-R-L-A, Manley, M-A-N-L-Y, drcarlamanley.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. And Carla, we're talking about destructive and constructive fear. And in your book, you personify it, so to speak. You say, this fear, you know, destructive fear, it smiles when you have escaped from something and you go into hiding and you pull the covers up over your head and it says, yay, yay. But that may not be so effective in your life. And some people might even look at it like the little devil on one side and the little angel on the other side speaking to you. So I'd love to go back to when you first decided to not be pushed by that destructive fear, and you turned around and said, we're going to talk. Do you remember that moment?
I do remember that. I was, just briefly, I lived a life that I did not realize was a lie. I just knew it wasn't healthy, and I was not in a good marriage and not in a good place and working in a job that was lucrative for other people but very destructive for me. And I finally found the courage to upend my life and went back to school to earn my doctorate. And it was in the middle of that program. In fact, when I first went to the campus, and I was like, there are people like me in the world. This is my home. This is my tribe. This is my kula. And people who talk like me and were spiritual like me and interested in things other than money like me. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is it. And I felt like I was breathing and eating for the first time in my life. It was eating food for my soul. And so in the course of that, I came to understand, it was a really big slap upside the head, that I had run my life by fear. And had somebody told me that 5 years before or even a year before, I would have said, me? I'm strong. I'm tough. I can deal with any business situation. I'm a mother. I can do that. No, 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 no. But what I realized, it was fear. And so I decided to research fear. And one of my mentors had said, you know, why don't you work with fear archetypally? And I said, okay. And I had come to understand what archetypally meant, which are just basically, we have these images in all of our psyches, no matter the language we speak, all around the world. If I say queen in any language, that will have a meaning. If I say orphan, if I say hero, if I say fool, so these are archetypes. If I say fear, everyone will, if they sit and think about it, will be able to get an image of fear, of what that means to them as an individual, yet collectively we'll all feel it. And so I took that mentor's advice and I really sat down with fear and remember that fear came to me and it was definitely a large, white, silver-bearded creature and he was just beautiful but intimidating. And, you know, I talked with him and then he said, lie down, and pointed to a bed. And it was a small bed. It was a twin bed. I said, oh, I don't want to lie down next to you. I remember thinking that and feeling that. But basically what I came to understand was that he was going to lie next to me and I was going to lie next to him. And it actually gives me tears when I think about it because it was a turning point in my life. I realized that working with fear was my calling. And that my calling was to help other people understand their fears so that if I had it in my power, I would help people not be as stuck as long as I was stuck. I wanted to help other people break free of their fear so that nobody had to live in that sort of tyrannical dark space where my gifts, my light, and my role modeling for my very own children, my nieces and nephews, was a dark one, not a light one. And so that was the turning point. I realized it took me time to metabolize it, but that my journey was to help people understand that fear, we can either run from it, we can hide from it, or we can see the other side and allow that side to be our best, most wonderful and beautiful non-denominational ally in life.
You know, that just reminds me of that story takes me back when you lay down on the bed with fear, you know, figuratively or you vision that. It reminds me of that quote that I used of yours in the introduction. The aspects of fear that we ignore or run from are often the very aspects that contain the subtle messages we need the most.
Yes.
So it's like talking to that fear. There's a message that fear is giving us. Is that what you're saying?
Indeed. And that is the beauty. Here's the difficult part. It's such a good point, because destructive fear is loud, cantankerous, moody, goal-directed, and very big, which is our outside world. This is the daily world we live in, is riddled with destructive fear. It's one of the reasons I can't bear to listen to newscasts, right? They drive me crazy. Because that's what they're causing an uprising of fear. And with fear comes hatred, right? And sadness and depression and exhaustion and all of that, right? So if here's the piece, is that constructive fear is loving, kind, soft, genuine, true.
And maybe not so loud.
Not so loud. Not so loud, Justine. That's the important part to know, is that constructive fear is always there, but we miss it. We are going so fast. We are so burnt out. We are so stressed that we don't know to listen. And that is the message that I tried to get across, to slow it down. If you live the life that is such a busy one, like I lived for so long, I had no idea, because fear was running my days. I had no idea. Here's what I liken it to. Being in the middle of the ocean and you're paddling with no end in sight, and all of your energy is spent paddling, just staying above the water and trying to avoid the sharks. And then if you slow down, whether it's to do some self-reflection or some meditation, now you have a little inner tube. You have a little lifesaver, so to speak, that you can hold on to. And that's how then, when you're doing that, you're able to start listening more to constructive fear. Here's the beauty of it. Then, once you're able to rest a little bit and quiet a little bit, what do you see off on the horizon? The little island with the water and the dates and the sand and the resting place that may have been there all along. You just didn't see it because you were so busy paddling and paddling and paddling. And that's, so then how do we get there? How do we get to that island? And that's what constructive fear will start doing. It will help you start seeing that the island exists, that transformation exists, that potential is there. And then this is what gets a little even more difficult, is then we have to take action. We have to have a commitment to changing our lives, not just rewiring our brains by practicing that which we want, but then taking daily steps to get a little closer to the life of our dreams. That life of our dreams is on that island, and only we know what's on that island. Only we know what we are meant to be doing with our lives. And then the calmer we get, the more we rest, the more we listen to constructive fear, we can start taking the steps that lead us. And that's the transformational part of fear.
So, like, it's all the same fear, because the fear is giving us a message. And so, that mechanism? What is that? Maybe you, all right, you're in a therapy session and there's a client with you, and you're listening to this client. They came in for some reason, and they finally, maybe somebody said, you better go to therapy, you know, or for some reason they made the decision to come to therapy. And so they're with you, but they think they have it all figured out, and you've probably gone through this so many times with people. What is it that you're listening for when you are trying to help someone who doesn't know how to even begin the journey of that self-reflection?
Okay, such a good question, Justine. I liken myself to, I have a very unique way of doing therapy. I liken myself to a hound dog because I sit there and I listen and I soak in energy as much as, you know, is safe for me. And I watch body posture. I watch neurolinguistically what the person is saying. I listen, I feel. And then here's a very good example. And of course, no names, and I'll kind of weave a couple clients together. So it's such a common theme, right? So that there's nothing identifying. But often a woman or a man will come in, but I'll use women because this is a very common theme. They'll come in and they'll say, I'm very unhappy in my relationship. I'm not sleeping well. I'm not eating well. I'm not exercising. I'm not really, something's off. And then often, not always, they'll eventually come to tell me that they're having an affair. And so they're looking outside the relationship, but they feel guilty for that. And that will often come up where they'll finally say, you know, I feel guilty, or it's not right for me, or I know I shouldn't be doing this. Sometimes they'll be carrying on multiple affairs, whether it's a male or a female. And so again, I'm just tracking and doing reflective listening, feeding back. Yet where, so I'm tracking, where are they happy? Where are they unhappy? What I will often find is that they'll say something, and I'm thinking of a particular woman just very recently who said, I think I love him. Well, I don't really love him. What I love is the stability. I love that he has a good job. And then we'll continue on.
So that's like a truth right there.
There's that truth.
It's like a little light goes off.
Yes.
But you don't pursue it right there, do you? I mean, you don't say stop or there or anything, but you let it kind of unfold.
I continue to let it unfold to see what more is coming.
So you notice it.
But I noticed it.
Yeah.
Here is a truth.
Mm-hmm.
She was finally able. And of course, I don't judge one way or mm-hmm. another. It's just there. So then we continue on and we might talk about the other man she's seeing or where she does get joy or where he does get joy, whatever's happening. And then I'll say, okay, so, you know, I noticed something when you were talking. When you were talking about so-and-so, you know, the key thing you said about your relationship with him, you don't like this, you don't like this, you don't like this, you don't like the sex, so, you know, there's this. But the key thing you said is that you really like that he has a stable job and you have a roof over your head. Can you tell me more about that? And then the person might start talking about, well, yeah, you know, I'm afraid, you know, I don't have a very high-paying job, or we bought a home together, or whatever the deal is, right? And so then we just work with that. So here, destructive fear was controlling the relationship.
So you might go back to the childhood and even find that initial event.
Yes.
So we'll talk more about that in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Dr. Carla Manley, and she's the author of Joy from Fear, Create the Life of Your Dreams by Making Fear Your Friend. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. And we're talking about those moments, like in therapy, when someone starts to break through and you start to see some initial wounding that mm-hmm. goes way back. And once that is revealed, so to speak, in this safe environment, what is your advice, or how does it become healed?
It's interesting, Justine. I steer clear of advice, right? And I help clients come up with their own advice, right? So in this situation, we can imagine that this client I would say, often say something like this, you know, so what is your moral code? How do you feel about extramarital affairs or, how do you feel about that? And if they say, as they 99% of the time do, oh, I don't agree with them. I don't think they're a good idea. And